Today, it is all about the draft, the comic book draft. No, we don't have a formal draft. People aren't selected off of a board, but each era has talent, incredible talent that enters the field. There's always talent. But what about the drive? What about that fight, the dog in each one of these talents to stand out, to be identified, to do work that separates them? That is what we discuss today as we look at each era's talent and two particular eras that just stand out and really set the stage for the comics industry that we exist in today. Also, original art, it keeps coming in, the reaction to the Million Dollar Pages, and everybody has got a question about art and value, and we talk about all of this on today's all-new Robservation. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Robservations. I am your host, Rob Liefeld. These are my Robservations. They're about the comics industry. They're about the comics industry at large and all of the fantastic things that came from the comics industry, that came from the original comics published by Marvel, DC, and later on Image Comics, Dark Horse Comics, and all these different comic book companies that you have, and they have contributed to what you are seeing on your streaming services. They are contributing to what you are seeing on your giant IMAX screens. They are contributing to your video games. They are on the toy aisles. We love comic books here at Robservations, and we love discussing them with you and discussing the history of not only the comic books themselves, but of the incredible creative minds, the creators behind these incredible storylines, behind these incredible characters. When I started Robservations, it was in the heart of the pandemic. My son said, "Dad, if you want to record, I can hook you up." Because I said, I think I want to do a podcast. He went out, he got me all the materials, because he is much more, as is everyone in this family, much more technically minded than I am. And he went out and he hooked me up, and we are coming up on our 4-year anniversary. I never honestly thought that we would get to this point, but welcome to all the new viewers. Welcome to all the new listeners who have subscribed, who have joined, who have climbed on the podcast. We are happy to have you here. It is a joy of mine to talk comic books and talk comic books with you. And I never in a million years thought that over the 365 episodes that we have logged, that so much of the things that I had shared would actually be new to so many of you. I literally took for granted my own journey with comic books. I literally took for granted all of the stuff that I have learned over the many years since I was 7 years old, pulling these off the spinner rack, some of my richest memories, those early years. For me, formatively, 1974 to 1980 is probably my greatest love affair with comics, and it isn't nostalgia. Nostalgia is when I want to go back to that watering hole that I had never been to a watering hole, but in the summer of 1985, the two brothers that my folks had been friends with their family, and so I was able to have people of my own age, kind of peers, when I arrived at 17 years old, day after I graduated high school. I had to go and I had to take care of my dad because he was going in for his second brain surgery. And if you've heard my story, the first one put him in a coma for 9 months when I was 10 years old. So this is a traumatic experience. My parents informed me when they showed up for my graduation that my dad had indeed been diagnosed again, and some of the things that were happening with his voice. Originally, it was his eye when I was a very young boy, but now it was his voice and his vocal cords, and one of them wasn't reaching the other because it was littered with tumors that were again stemming from the brain and now going down and affecting his mouth and throat. So I needed to jump on the plane, go with them to Illinois, live with them that summer, and help my dad. No problem. Dedicated son, they had allowed me to live with my sister my entire senior year so I could finish out high school with all my friends and not disrupt my life, but I was all too happy to go there in the summer. I was fortunate that Brian and Brad, they were the two boys who were my age, two brothers, and we matched up great. And that one of the first things that we did that summer in the off days after my dad was back and secured and I could get away for afternoons with my mom, you know, pitching in on the weekends. Because again, my dad needed most of my help Mondays through Fridays because she was still working. They took me to a watering hole. A watering hole. And you're like, it's like a lake, Liefeld. Yeah, but I come from California. I was born and raised in California. That watering hole experience and swimming out to the platform in the middle of the watering hole. And, it's man-made. It's a watering hole. But it was big. And tons of kids and youth and jumping off of the platform and pushing each other. Just one fantastic experience. We went there twice. Two fantastic experiences. Nostalgia is me calling him up, calling Brad up 2 years ago saying, is that watering hole still there? I think I want to fly there this summer. I think I want to go back. I think I want to go jump off that. He's like, Rob, it's gone. The watering hole dried up. It's been replaced, that watering hole. And he told me exactly where it was. And a part of me was like, ah, I won't be able to relive that moment. That is nostalgia. Nostalgia is not being completely swept up in incredible works by incredible artists. It's not nostalgia when I admire Raiders of the Lost Ark, 2001 Space Odyssey, or Star Wars. Those are works by incredible directors, auteurs. Spielberg, top of his game, even at that young age. Lucas, top of his game. Okay? I mean, we are talking Kubrick, top Kubrick. Then again, Godfather, you know, Mean Streets. This is top Coppola, top Scorsese. Me telling you that I was able to grow up in that time with that class of directors. That's not nostalgia. That's an admiration for the excellence of the craft and the comic books that were coming out between 1974 and 1980. John Byrne, Terry Austin, Frank Miller, Klaus Janson, okay? George Perez, Pablos Marcos, Jim Starlin, and Joseph Rubinstein. Some of the best artwork this industry has ever created was created during that time. Some of the best storytelling ever created. So when I talk about that is where my love affair was deepened, those are great works. They are not nostalgia. Nostalgia is when the lake that you can't go jump back in to relive that juice that you got off, that you want to have that useful experience again. That's not available. But even the desire to go do it, okay, that's nostalgia. Nostalgia is not admiring great works just because they came out when you were young. But my love affair with comics started back then, and it has continued throughout this podcast. I have been able to share with you my passion. And I am so thankful to have you on board. There are so many incredible events in the world of comic books. And again, as I said, we have a thick library, a vast library of 365 plus episodes. We're adding it with this one today that you can go back. I read to you directly from published news magazines, comic book news magazines, some of the great Comics Journal, Amazing Heroes, Comics Interview, Feature, Comics Feature, so many of these different magazines that I'm able to share with you because they've been lost to the sands of time. They're extremely difficult to have, but Hoarder Liefeld would not let them go. They're in Mylar bags. They're treated as well as some of my finest comic books. The Chronicle series that I have quoted for. I actually go deep into an instance that came out of one of the Chronicle series, which was a series of books that Fantico was doing. A company called Fantico was doing. In conjunction with Marvel, but they lost the license, and it was because of a situation where Jack Kirby, the answers that he gave kind of angered Marvel, and the editor-in-chief at the time, Jim Shooter, pulled it. That entire episode is on my Patreon. We have a Patreon now, very rare. There'll be a second episode loading up this weekend, so there are some behind the Patreon wall is some extra content if you choose to go there, but that particular story comes as a result of again having these magazines from 1981, these interviews with these creators that just don't exist anymore. And if you're lucky, they'll be downloaded and they'll be archived somewhere. But I have been able to share so much. I have faxes, memos, internal correspondence that I have between me and my partners and Marvel and all the different interactions that we have. I have tried to bring to you comics history in its raw sense. Without any sort of editorializing, just read to you. Sometimes these interviews, they're crazy, and those interviews could not be done today without some of those people being absolutely 1,000% canceled because some of the things that are said and shared are nuts. But again, Robservations is a place where we celebrate all of this. I am so happy to celebrate it with you. One of the best things about this podcast, one of the best times is when you pick a topic and it gets so much reaction. And the original art, the Million Dollar Pages, part one and part two, they were split over a couple of weeks. But man, has that got, you're still texting me. You're all still texting me and DMing me. And look, let me just stop and let's give some ground rules. First of all, in the first part of Million Dollar Pages, because this is okay. This is okay to, you know, circle back. Don't we love that phrase? Circle back and readdress some of the particulars. Let's go through some of the particulars because there are people who want to move goalposts. And let me tell you something. The first episode where I read with you the $5 million pages, the five of the $1 million pages that are on record. Let's go with on record. A key two words are on record. They are recorded sales by auction houses that achieved seven figures or greater than seven figures. So we shared those. In the second episode, I speculated. I gave you my personal speculation. And if I'm guilty of going for the low-hanging fruit, I went for the low-hanging fruit, the stuff that I thought was the easiest. I have been told by other competitors how much they would go. We all gave a number on X-Men Days of Future Past 141. I wouldn't be surprised if it exceeded that. Everyone's bid was in seven figures. The Hulk cover, the three, is it 340, 341? Forgive me, it's not in front of me. The Hulk, the Todd McFarlane with the Hulk in the reflection of the claws, I think that is a safe bet. It is a safe bet. Maybe it's $899. Maybe it's $899,000. Okay. Maybe it falls short. Okay. But I think it's a close bet. I have been offered $1 million for a cover I no longer own. I was then asked how to reach the person that had it. That person has told other people that I know that he has also received $7 million. So New Mutants 98 to me is a surefire speculation. It's been told. It is a key book. New Mutants 98 stands as one of, if not the key of the 90s. The one that anyone will bring to challenge it. And they're kind of 1A and 1B, depending on whether it's Tuesday, Thursday, or Sunday, is Amazing Spider-Man 300 and New Mutants 98. So these track, these make sense. I wasn't sure on Amazing Spider-Man 300 because it's, you know, a great cover, but I just wasn't certain. I'm more certain about the Hulk issue. But the cover to Wolverine number one, I'm fairly certain that's a safe bet. The cover to Hulk 181, and again, I went for really safe bets. Hey, maybe the cover to Star Wars number one, the original cover to Star Wars number one by Howard Chaykin and Tom Palmer. Let's throw that in there. I didn't at the time. But so many of you have been telling me about hearsay. Hearsay is when you were told by so-and-so or so-and-so has been telling that they paid X amount of money. That's not a public listing. So I'm not going to further speculate if it has changed hands. And a couple of you want to turn four individual covers in some cases into one piece. And it's not. If that cover was listed as a separate line item in the catalog, and it was cover 1A, cover 1B, cover 1C, cover 1D, and they were all each designed to sell as one cover in and of itself and not part of a collected version, a collected image. Those were sold, ordered, distributed as single covers. You want to sell them all together? You sold four covers, okay? You sold four covers, not one. You can say, but it's one image. That's four covers that happen to make up one image. Then, well, I bet if you were to say X-Force number one, it would be one cover. Yes, it would be genius. It would be Sherlock because the back cover is not sold separately. You are, some of these people, they have dug down deep in agenda, and all I'm doing is giving you facts. I'm giving you facts. When a cover is a separate line item, and it is listed in a separate line item, and it's shipped a week apart, and the whole ridiculousness of this is there's no record of this even selling. And if I'm being vague, there's reasons for the vagueness, okay? But man, some of you guys, you know, but between agenda and spin, I don't know, my head is not still whirling. Man, some of you all. Now, I am going to share one, which I thought was very thoughtful, extremely thoughtful. It had some good reasoning here. I'm going to share this with you because I think this poses a really good question that bears a response. This question was posed by one Rob Messick. Rob Messick weighed in after listening to both part one and part two of Million Dollar Pages, and he said, "Hey, Rob, great episode as always. Do you think any Image Comics original art could break a million. He said the cover to Youngblood number one or the cover to Spawn number one. Honestly, I can't think of any modern comic cover post-1992 that could come close. And it really got me thinking, and I'm going to give you my honest to God reaction because I hadn't really put those in focus. Now, when you say you can't think of anything since 1992, I'm going to tell you right now, the people who have the cover with the first Miles Morales, whatever that book is, they claim that there are offers out of $1 million on that. Okay, that they have been offered that. So that would be a cover beyond 1992. But I agree with you. There's not a lot. There's not a whole lot. Especially now with the dearth of covers. But when it gets to Image Comics, so yeah, Miles Morales, whatever. I think it's Ultimate. Whatever it is, it's got him standing center on the cover. I think Mark Bagley illustrated it. That is, I have been told, I have been informed that the owners of that page have received seven-figure offers. Isn't that fun? Isn't that fun to, you know, have this hearsay brought forth onto a podcast? But hey, this is the kind of discussion that this sparked. I want to say the book was called Ultimate Shakedown, but I know it wasn't Ultimate Shakedown because that sounds funny. And now I'm going to actually have to literally, like, as I'm talking, as fast as I possibly can go through this entire chain and let's see. I bet you I can find it. It was mentioned. It is called, am I even going to find it? I'm not sure. It's Ultimate something. Okay. First Miles Morales. That's what they tell me. That is what they tell me, that went for seven figures. So there, that gets that out of the way. As to the Image Comics art, that's a really interesting thing and I hadn't thought of it. And here's my honest take. I believe that Spawn number one would absolutely be in the equation. Seven figures is harder to achieve than most people think. Again, think of the gut-wrenching it would take to get to 800,000. People thought the cover to Dark Knight number one was going to go for greater than the 2 million. It's such an important book. Important book matters. The quotes on important book, not just a piece of art. It's an important book you can say forever. You know, I own the cover to the book that changed Batman forever. He has not been the same. I actually did a dedicated podcast. Go back and get it. The 10 ways Dark Knight changed Batman forever. I mean, those changes have been permanent since 1986. It is the most seminal Batman work that exists. It is the most consequential Batman work that exists. Todd McFarlane, Spawn number one, because of the heat around Todd, it is, and the fact that he has the largest modern day sale, his last issue of Amazing Spider-Man with Hulk punching Spider-Man went over 600,000. I don't know if it was 640, 680. I don't have it in front of me. I just know that the closing price had a six in it. It's the highest recorded cover, and that was 10 years ago. That was a decade ago. Now, nothing that he has done since then, and there are brilliant works, have achieved that high watermark. But I would have to imagine that Spawn would get there. As to Youngblood, it is the first comic of Image Comics, and that also matters in the filmography, the comics ography of the business. Like, what was the very first Marvel comic? Well, it wasn't Spider-Man, it wasn't Fantastic Four, but that still matters. It still matters. What book? Youngblood arrived 2.5 months before any other comic. It launched Image Comics. It was the face of the company, and it remains very, very, what do you call it? Very identifiable to the entire movement. And again, it is historic. Historically, you cannot remove the fact that it is the first Image comic book launch. That said, it would not get at this time. It would not get seven figures. Something incredible would happen to Youngblood, a successful cartoon, and or a blockbuster film, because that's the kind of stuff that elevates. Now, what has driven a lot of interest, I've been told from all Spawnheads over the last 7 years, Todd in 2017 at San Diego Comic-Con said he was bringing you a Spawn movie. That set off a new chain of interest. And Todd regularly says, people, oh, I'll be giving you another update at this show. I'll be giving you another update at this show. Recently, he was at WonderCon 2024 here in Anaheim. And he told the crowd there at his toy panel, he will have Spawn news for you in San Diego. Last year, he said in San Diego, I'll have Spawn news for you in New York. So the fans seem to be subscribed, assigned. They are completely on board with the idea that this is happening. And it has given all things Spawn a second life, a third life, a renewed interest. So you take Todd's personal artwork that seems to be the favorite of the decade over Jim Lee's, over myself, in terms of pricing. And I think you'd have to come to the conclusion that it definitely could be Spawn number one, could absolutely, and maybe Todd could say, but I've
turned down a mill at least 10 times. Everybody, Todd Father here coming in hot on the observations, and I'm telling you, one mil is in the pocket. It's a done deal. I got that offer. So
thank you, Todd. Thank you for dropping by and letting us know that is indeed part of something that he can factor in and count on. I think it's a safe bet that it would be there. It would absolutely be there, especially given the longevity. The longevity also helps, but the movie, the cartoon, the toys, it has the most stuff, the most merchandised material, the most history of any of them. Now, I'll also just wrap it up with a pivot. If there was someone who could secure all seven number ones, now that's seven books, but I imagine that getting all of them together would rise the cost of each of them individually. If you just happen to have Spawn number one, Youngblood number one, Wildcats number one, Dragon, Cover to Dragon number one, Wildcats, did I already say that? Shadowhawk, Cyberforce, you know, if you get all those covers, Wetworks too, wow, that's crazy. That would be incredible. And the aggregate in that case, I think would suddenly pop all of them. But I don't for one minute believe that the only one that is close to that is likely to be Spawn. So Rob, thank you for that. It really, I had not, you know, looked, I had not had my focus in the Image stuff at all. But I think there is an age of that works. Now, when Stan Lee hobbled down the red carpet in 2002 for the premiere of the Spider-Man movie, I said to Joy, hey, I'll probably be 70 when something of mine gets made. And here we are, I'm 56 years old, and it feels like that was a self, you know, fulfilling prophecy that I may be in my 60s and 70s when something from my creator-owned catalog gets made. We're always, you know, in talks with filmmakers trying to push that stuff forward. It's much harder than you think. Otherwise, everybody would have them. And I'm going to tell you, Marvel being as successful as they had has not hindered other competitive projects, has not helped other competitive projects. It's hindered it because people go, well, didn't Marvel do that already? They know what they're doing. They have really created a great prevent defense with their success at all. Look how DC found it so difficult to scale the accomplishments of Marvel. So what you got to do is in case of something like The Boys, which I know is streaming, it's not theatrical, but it has and very much takes on the Deadpool tone that was established by that movie in 2016, but it's found its own lane being its own thing. But Marvel's success has actually made it more difficult for competing superheroes, especially superhero projects, to get to the screen because they are then immediately equated, well, how will this compare to? And again, the Marvel brain trust, the Disney people, they're aware of this. They know this. It was that important that their movies shine as bright as they did so to as blind everybody else and keep them. And that's just competitive. That's just being ruthlessly competitive, which they are, and they have reaped the rewards. And that's not a criticism. There is no criticism in that comment. But as each and every one of these projects seeks to position itself, you will maybe see another pop, but certainly the Marvel Universe pop that really between X-Men in 2000 and Spider-Man in 2002 glowed up the whole catalog, all of it. So we don't know if there's an Image Comics glow up, but I know that Mark and Todd and Valentino and Larson and myself are always working towards making those happen. Again, remember the Wildstorm catalog is part of the DC Universe now. It is part of the DC proper, the DC large, and maybe they'll factor in to the DC library at some point, and then we can readdress all of this, given that maybe 10 years down the line, these all get a different glow up in the same manner that the Marvel stuff got a glow up with the incredible 20-year run they've had in cinemas. Original art, it's not going away. One of ones are incredibly desirable. They are great. I appreciate and am fortunate to have every single piece of original art that I have, because it signifies a one of one. It's special. It's unique. And as Highlander was so famous for saying, there can be only one. So getting to our main topic on the table today. Actually, before that, you know what? I want to tell you something. In regards to what I just said about moving things towards the big screen and getting these properties. Hey, I've addressed some of the buzz around Evangeline, a property that went on to become our number one selling book at my Extreme Studios back in the 90s. And you've seen some of those reports and some of that buzz around the movie, and there have been movement since then. But we have never collected the entirety of Evangeline, and we're going to do it across multiple collections. We start with Volume 1, which is up at Kickstarter right now. Counterpoint Comics has fulfilled 30 Kickstarter campaigns. It's run by my buddy Marat Michaels. I'm so proud of him. He has become a king of crowdfunding. The guy is phenomenal. He is just as hardworking and as disciplined and still as cool as the kid I met in 1984, 1985, who started out as my assistant and went on to become this mini mogul. Or is it even mini? He's just mogul. Mogul Marat has Counterpoint Comics. They have secured the license to Evangeline, giving them the opportunity to put together this first ever. We only did a trade paperback of the original Evangeline 1-2-3 miniseries. Then in the 2000s, when we brought her back, there was a hardcover that we did of those books and collected those. But the original multiple miniseries, Power, Evangeline Power, Evangeline Deadly Sins, Evangeline Armageddon, the regular series, none of that has ever been collected individually or together. And now they're doing it together. It's in an awesome omnibus. The Evangeline Omnibus is on Kickstarter right now from Counterpoint Comics. Search for it. Get there. Especially right now, if you're hearing this, you will still be able to get in on the 48-hour deal. The 48-hour deal has a lot of bells and whistles, some extras, some extra books that get tagged on. There is no omnibus this big that is at anywhere near the price points that are being offered. Most omnibuses, I grabbed them last night to check out, they're 125 pages. I mean, they're $125. They're $125, $150, okay? Yes, I almost snorted right there. $125 and $150, okay? The price point on this is half that for the buy-in. On just the omnibuses, that's all you want. Get over to the Kickstarter for the Evangeline Omnibus by Counterpoint. I am so happy they have the license. I am so happy to see this come to life. It was fully funded within 30 minutes. We are so excited. So now we are just adding on in the stretch goal period of the campaign for the next month. But do not miss out on this. You do not want to miss out on this. This is custom and it is available from Kickstarter through Counterpoint Comics, the Evangeline Omnibus. Do not miss out on it. I just really want to share this with you so that I don't forget, because we just have so much going on, and this is a place that so many of you, when I see you on my Whatnot shows, which I do on the app called Whatnot, which is a great live stream app, you should download it and follow me so you'll be alerted to my live shows on Whatnot, where we have all sorts of cool exclusive stuff. So many people say, I found this from your podcast. I found Whatnot because you mentioned it. I found this because you referenced it. So I'm just trying to share with you all the different stuff that we've got going on. I am so thankful that there is this level of interaction with us, and I just again appreciate you and just appreciate you as the audience so much. Today what I want to get into is draft classes. I don't want to make this about sports. I'm going to just quickly pivot as a reference point. We're coming up on all these drafts. We just had the WNBA draft, which had one of the greatest draft classes it's ever had. Angel Reese, Caitlin Clark among them. Big, giant juice around the WNBA. The women's basketball championship game bested the men's basketball championship by 4 million viewers. 18 million to 14 million. That has never happened before. Women's basketball is having a giant glow up because of the quality of the stars, the talent that is playing. There's lots of talent always in all of these sports. But then you separate from stars. Stars, stories, talent. This NBA draft is seen to be the weakest NBA draft in a decade. No standout names in the domestic circuit. No surefire superstars. No Zion Williamson. No LeBron James. There are questions about who would even go, you know, in the top five. The WNBA had the stars that were forged in this incredible playoff run, and all of them did extremely well. Then you've got the NBA. I mean, and there are players that I watch from different colleges because I watch men's basketball a ton. Mid players, even from schools I like, that are opting into the draft because they know that this draft is weak. And they go, well, somebody, you got to use your pick. You don't get to defer. There's no deferment. If you have a pick, you have to use your pick. So knowing that people are a little disappointed in the names that are out there, people are opting out saying, I'm declaring. It's a loophole that some players are going to be able to slip through because it is so non-talent heavy. There isn't a bunch of really surefire names that are going to impact the teams that draft them on the board. Now, similarly, the NFL is going to have one of its best quarterback drafts ever in its upcoming draft next week. So many different quarterbacks. Every day you're listening to who's jostling, who's in the top five, and they're just moving these quarterbacks around. And you know, who's going to take a leap? Who's going to take the quarterback? Who needs to change the culture? It's on ESPN. It's on Fox Sports. It's on everywhere all the time. People are debating exactly to what extent these quarterbacks are going to be positioned. It is seen as a talent-rich draft, and the NFL prospects are deep beyond the quarterbacks, the receiving core, the linemen, the defensive talent. This is like NFL teams are excited. I read where my team, the Rams, flew to meet one of the prospects. They don't fly to meet anybody, but this is a talent-rich draft, and it got me thinking about comic book drafts and the draft classes that stand out in the history of comic books and what happened when they got... Now, there is no draft, as you know. There is no draft. Marvel doesn't pick, but in terms of draft classes, in terms of classes of talent that came in and impact and changed the comics, that's what I'm talking about. That's why I've called this episode the comic book draft. In regards to draft classes and groups of talent entering any field, entertainment, sports, look, there seems to be in each era, sometimes it jumps eras, but there is a group. I just covered with you athletes and the drafts. Now I'm going to pivot to entertainment. I'm going to go to the 70s. Some of the directors I've already mentioned in this actual podcast when I was discussing nostalgia early on. So Francis Ford Coppola, George Lucas, Steven Spielberg, William Friedkin, who directed The Exorcist, these guys, Scorsese, Coppola, Lucas, Spielberg, Friedkin, all of these guys, Brian De Palma, they were all friends. They were all buddies. They knew each other. They were competing for jobs in some instances. They were all very aware of what each other was doing and the moves each of them were making. George Lucas was very aware of what his mentor, Francis Ford Coppola, was doing. He saw some of those moves. He learned from them. He implemented some of the stuff that Francis did that was successful. He tried to pivot away maybe some of the stuff that he saw that wasn't. They all had a general admiration, but they all knew that they were part of a new breed of filmmaker. Similarly, in the 90s, you had Richard Linklater, you had Quentin Tarantino, Robert Rodriguez, you had Paul Thomas Anderson, and all the other names that I'm leaving out. But these filmmakers hit the scene with their very buzzy, talked about films, won over audiences, kept getting more and more money and commitments to do more and more of the movies that they wanted to make. And they really helped define the 90s. Now, you can say in the 2000s, it was the rise of Christopher Nolan. And really, he has been the kind of the pace horse for that era. But we still tune in. I will watch anything. Linklater, Tarantino, PTA, Paul Thomas Anderson, Robert Rodriguez. I'll check them all out. I find them to be innovative. They were bold with their moves. They thought outside the box. They didn't just become the next director on the next installment of whatever Karate Kid or whatever Turtles movie was coming out. Because look, there's also a life to be made being a shooter, being a guy who just takes assignments and goes, yeah, I'll do Cliffhanger 2. Yeah, I'll do Die Hard 5. I mean, that's a gig. That's a paying gig. That's a way to pay your bills, live your life, and do what you love. If you wanted to make movies, you're making movies. Same in comics, okay? Comic books. Let me tell you, in the 70s, from 1974 to 1978, a four-year period, we had the exact same thing, and I've talked about it often, the exact same kind of new class that came in that really served to take over the industry and build every aspect of comics that we are currently living in right now. They took over for John Buscema and Jack Kirby. Not took over, but they became the preferred flavor, the preferred taste. John Buscema, Jack Kirby, John Romita Sr., Gil Kane, all of these incredible talents had a chance to shine, but suddenly you had John Byrne, you had George Perez, you had Jim Starlin, you had Howard Chaykin, you had Walt Simonson, and you had Frank Miller. And if you're like, wait, Frank Miller, yes, let's just do this right here, right now. So, just because some of these people have their greatest, their absolute greatest successes in the 80s doesn't mean that they weren't getting their first jobs in 1978. Frank Miller's first job, first published work, is in a Gold Key comic for Twilight Zone. That was published in 1978. He immediately picked up jobs and started doing stories for DC Comics. In 1978, Weird War Tales number 64. He also contributed to an Unknown Soldier story in 1978, written by Elliot S. Magan. And as I've covered here on our Star Wars, John Carter, Battlestar Galactica episode a few weeks back, Frank Miller did an entire issue of John Carter, Warlord of Mars, and it really showed off a lot of his Gil Kane DNA. So many of the extended figures, all the figures in motion, the action, the pacing, you could see where this guy came from. He was a name to watch. And then in 1979, so we are still firmly in the 70s, he is handed the Daredevil assignment. He starts as the artist and then eventually becomes the artist and the writer in 1980-81. So Frank Miller, yes, you cannot escape that this guy is showing his samples, knocking on doors, getting published in 78 through 79, and then boom in the 80s. Hey, John Byrne does incredibly celebrated work, but you can't get past the fact that his most important work was 1977 to 1980, that entire Uncanny X-Men run. When he arrives on X-Men 108, it is game on. And literally, he changes the face of the X-Men forever. You watch the X-Men animated series right now, you're still seeing ideas, concepts, imagery that John Byrne and Dave Cockrum, I should have mentioned Dave Cockrum as well, implemented. The 70s had this incredible class, and they spoke to the young people reading those books. And those young people happened to be named Jim and Rob and Todd and Dale and Eric and Wills. And we all got hired in the 80s, and it is a hell of a class. I remember going, wow, I am part of an incredible class. Now, Todd and Mark Silvestri are mid-80s guys. Jim Lee, guys like myself, Jim Lee, Eric Larson, we're on the opposite side of the mid-80s. We're not quite the end of the 80s, but we're in the 87 realm, so we're in that last three-year period. And then just like you're going to say, but Rob, the greatest work Frank Miller did was in the 80s. The greatest work Walt Simonson did was in the 80s. The greatest work that Perez did was Crisis on Infinite Earths and the Titans, which is in the 80s. All true, but they have to get their start. They were drafted in the 70s. Kobe may have been drafted in the 90s. Shaq was entered the NBA in the mid-90s with the Orlando Magic, but he doesn't win a ring till the 2000s, till 2000, okay? So, but the drafting and that those early stories that you put under your belt as you build your career, that matters. That's the class that you're with, you know? That incredible class of athletes. You know, in the NBA, the Kevin Garnett class, the Allen Iverson class. These guys transform basketball. But right now, I mean, on the daily, people debate who's the face of the NBA when LeBron and Steph Curry are gone, you know? The Golden State Warriors are out of it. They didn't make the playoffs. The Lakers could be eliminated in the first round. We are seeing less of these faces, not more. LeBron definitely paired with Anthony Davis has been able to go further and certainly to the Western Conference Finals, kept his profile up and out there, and the legend continued to grow. But eventually we are going to be in an NBA without them, just like we're in an NFL without Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. I mean, the NFL is the most popular sport in the United States. It also is entertainment, and the numbers that it receives are straight up, you know, giant television entertainment numbers. But when you pivot that same attention to comic books, there is a general malaise right now among the comic book community. It's with everyone you talk to. It's with every publisher, and people are trying to figure it out because the way that we consume comic books is different. It's not the 70s. It's certainly not the 90s. But let's at least agree that 70s draft class and that 90s, 80s draft. So it's the 70s and the 80s, and their greatest work of the 70s was done in the 80s, and the greatest work of the 80s class was done in the 90s. But those draft classes are incredible. Now, that's not to say that no talent didn't come through the doors. I know for a fact I hired and curated a lot of that talent. The guys at Extreme, the guys at Wildstorm, the talent at Top Cow. But let me tell you where things change. You know, whenever an athlete wants to make a move, immediately the media assumes on him he's difficult, he's demanding. You know, why does fill in the player from Milwaukee, fill in the player from Cleveland, fill in the player from New York, fill in the player from Dallas want to move? Fill in the player from Brooklyn, fill in all the places James Harden has asked for a transfer from, okay? Why do these people want to move? Because they want to better their situation because they're aggressive, and some of them feel the need to break out. They don't want to have finished their career without a ring. Blake Griffin, most of his career was with the Clippers. Lob City was a thing that desperately wanted to happen in the very worst way. They wanted to take out the Lakers. They played in the same arena. All of that is gone. Next year, they do not play at what was formerly known as Staples, as Crypto.com will not be their home anymore. They've got a brand new place near where the Rams play, near SoFi, financed by their giant billionaire owner. You know, they're going to find their own niche, apparently. At one point, they were going to become the new dominant draw in LA. It never happened. And they kept surrounding Blake Griffin with pieces, and he just never was able to helm and to be the face of his own, you know, multi-championship squad. Chris Paul is going to leave the NBA probably without a ring, and honestly came really close, deserves to. Now in comic books, I feel like when they say who's going to be the face of comic books, who is going to be the face of the NBA? You know, they'll tell you right now, Patrick Mahomes is now the face of the NFL with Tom Brady gone, and the Kansas City Chiefs have kind of slid into that. Patriots, especially now that with this latest win, they're kind of on that. Are they a villain? Are they a hero? They've kind of drawn the scorn of, wait for it, that almighty moniker that is going to find you eventually. They win too much. Those Kansas City Chiefs, they win too much. You know, they increase the animosity towards them has increased. In comic books, who's the face of comic books? Who is the face of comic books? I've asked retailers. I've been having extended conversations, and they tell me, Rob, no one. And then I say, well, the fandom chatter in this corner of Facebook says it's this writer. Nope, doesn't do a thing for me. Hasn't been, fills in the blank. A lot of people are like, well, why aren't these events working? Just like in sports, it's talent that wins out. It's that incredible throw. It's that incredible catch. It's being able to get by two to three defenders, sack the quarterback, and prevent him from making the winning play and thereby hoisting the trophy, you know, for your team. What are the winning plays in comics? What are the winning plays? What are the difference makers? Well, for a lot of these guys, it was finding their own voice. John Byrne, after having a falling out with Chris Claremont, was given the helm of the Fantastic Four, and he created the best single run of the Fantastic Four since Stanley and Jack Kirby. You doubt it, then you haven't experienced it. That's it. That's the only answer. If you doubt it, then you didn't experience it. Because anyone who was there at the time was like, wow, this is phenomenal. This is the amount of imagination that he attacked that book with, a book that was full of imagination, a book that there's a reason Marvel is so hot to make Fantastic Four happen, is because it is, as we've discussed here, the most storied title in their history. 101 straight issues by Jack the King Kirby. He just filled it with all manner of incredible imagination that still wows to this day. When I did an entire podcast on Galactus, that is an entire podcast devoted to one incredible design and character. Jack Kirby was the single most creative force comic books has ever seen. His work on Thor, on Fantastic Four. If you've heard me say this before, then you can listen to it one more time, because it's never not going to be true. But when John Byrne came along and was like, I'm going to attack this book. I'm not going to straw it. I'm going to write it. I'm going to put all these crazy, incredible ideas, new twists on old kind of tropes. And it lasted for 5 years and he crushed it. And it is a run that even the people I was reading, again, because he has a regular blog. I read his newsletters. Tom Brevoort even says a run that is particularly popular with fans, one that they hold in the highest of regard. That's what I'm talking about. If you don't know how great John Byrne's Fantastic Four run was, then you didn't experience it, and you should experience it. It's in multiple omnibuses, trade paperbacks. It was a very long, extended run. At the same time, we've covered Frank Miller. He had a dog in him. He just could not be, you know, just the guy drawing. So he wrote it and he transformed it. And you think of, when you think of John Byrne, I think John Byrne fans think of his incredible X-Men run, his depiction of Wolverine, his depiction of Jean, Cyclops, all of those great characters. But then you go to Alpha Flight and you think of this entire, why did I, you know, I never gave a crap about Canada before. And no, I would not be expected to give a crap about Canada when I was 11 years old. I was 11 years old, okay? I'm growing up in Orange County, South California. We're not a hockey family. Canada was not something that was put on the map to me until Alpha Flight put Canada on the map for me. And I was like, wow, a superhero team from Canada. That's what talent and drive creates. And for a long time, Alpha Flight number one was the biggest selling book for Marvel. It launched at record-breaking numbers for them, only to be broken by Secret Wars shortly after. John Byrne was a dog. He had that dog in him. He had that fight. That's what I'm talking about. Frank Miller had it. Walt Simonson was drawing Hercules in 1975, 1976 for DC Comics, Hercules Unchained. We've covered that on the show. I've covered the entire run, the incredible Hercules run that both himself and Wally Wood contributed to. It was a must, can't miss for me. But then Walt, with his incredible style, very distinct illustrative style, techniques, rendering, he went on to do the Alien adaptation of the 1979 Ridley Scott, the original Alien. It's beautiful. It's a graphic novel. It's so stunning. He really found a sci-fi niche. He was doing Battlestar Galactica, both writing and drawing it. He then segued into Star Wars. He did Star Wars issues for years. Then, whatever events conspired to find him taking over Thor, you now immediately associate him with Beta Ray Bill. Beta Ray Bill. He hit the ground and he made his mark and he wrote it and he drew it and he would not be contained. And since then, he did a run on the Fantastic Four. He did his Star Slammers work. He has been a relentless, relentless writer and illustrator. He had a dog in him. He had the fight. He's like, I'm not going to just sit back and draw other people's stories. I'm going to write them. I'm going to be the artistic force behind all of this. Those guys inspired us. We got it. We understood what it was like to not really give a shit about Thor. And then, wow, I care about Thor. It's the top of the heap. This is my most important book I'm buying because of who? Walt Simonson. Not because of all the talent that had kind of come and gone in the in-between times. The last great time that I was loving Thor was around the 300 issue. Roy Thomas, Keith Pollard, big Eternals saga that was really, really well done. But then in the middle, kind of from 1979 to when Walt comes on in 83, it's just not as exciting. And then Walt just takes us all on this incredible ride. His depiction of Loki, his depiction of Lady Sif, of Baldur. He did a Baldur miniseries. That's how popular Walt's run was. He got a Balder miniseries spinoff, okay? That class that they inspired, you know, they had dog in them. They had fight. Eric Larson, I got to write. Todd McFarlane, I got to write. Jim Lee, I got to write. Everybody wanted to take over because we knew that it was what we were supposed to do. We were supposed to leave our mark, and sometimes leaving your mark is determining every aspect of the comic. And what I've seen with the classes since, and what's going on now, what is the ambition? What's the goal? Where storytelling still matters. You know, what did Frank Miller do? He went on and he created an entire universe of change with Sin City, which was a incredibly influential body of work. And Frank then said, I think I'll just do this incredible epic called 300. I mean, the dog in Frank Miller is perhaps the only dog that could compare to Jack Kirby, who from Eternals to Black Panther to all the 70s stuff to the Fourth World to then even Captain Victory at Pacific Comics and Silver Star, Jack Kirby would not be stopped. He's like, I am going to control and I'm going to helm my destiny and I'm going to not look back. And I see the classes in the comic book industry since, and I do. I wonder, what is the goal? What is the purpose? Where are you leaving your mark? People say, oh, this is the best talent we've ever had. About three editor-in-chiefs ago at Marvel Comics, whoever that dude was like, the illustration in comics has never been better. I also believe it's never been more boring. Where's the instruction? You know, somebody asked the other day, have you instructed and influenced those who left behind you? No, I didn't. My work is supposed to do that. I did not know a single comic book artist in my life until late in my teens. Southern California, nobody worked out here. Until FedEx was a factor in overnight shipping, a lot of the artists were located on the East Coast, especially in the New York, the greater New York and the surrounding boroughs. You had George Perez in New York. You had John Byrne in New York. You had Frank Miller in New York. You get the picture? You had Walt Simonson in New York. All the greats lived thousands of miles from me. I could not reach them, okay? I'm in Southern California. I could not bump into a comic book artist. That's why when they came out and did signings, man, I would beg my dad until I could drive. Could you take me, or my mom, could you take me to Fountain Valley? George Perez is signing books today. Art Adams is signing books today. What inspired me was their work. I was smart enough to pay attention to what was going on with their career. I understood that 1 month they were a penciler, and 1 month it's like, whoa, now they're writing and determining it. And somehow, how is it possible? It's even better because it's a visual medium, okay? That does not mean writers can't do great work in comics. Let's say that together. That does not mean that writers cannot do great work in comic. And the alpha among the writers in the 2000s is Robert Kirkman, full stop. That's it. Determines the outlooks and the visions for his books, finds complementary partners and pulls them off. But I have, as I'm sitting here, as I do every day, right to the corner of my left is his original layout for the five covers that Infinite, a book that we did briefly together, four issues called The Infinite, launched with. I have multiple layouts that Robert did. Robert has an artist in him. He has that dog in him as well. He just didn't render it to its fullest extent. He didn't take the step towards being a penciler, and I'm sure if one day when he does it, if he found the right finisher, it would work. But Robert is a complete visionary as a writer. I've worked with him up close and personal. I see it. Otherwise, I see a passive nature among some of the great talents. There is great talent, but some of them are only looking at how to draw manuals and Bridgman books, and you've forgotten to mine the creativity that is comics, the creativity that is from Steve Ditko and from Gil Kane and from Jack Kirby and from Frank Miller. It breaks my heart now. People think the Frank Miller that they see now is the Frank Miller that they grew up with. Frank Miller has, for all intents and purposes, purposely and incredibly, and I applaud it, gone in a way where he is making underground comics. We spoke of the incredible Ed Piskor recently, when we memorialized him on this show, and we still miss him. We love you, Ed, and love out to your family, all of the Piskor family. Ed started in undergrounds. It's like Frank Miller is ending up in underground. I dig it. I've seen the prettiest Superman Frank Miller can draw. I've seen the most dynamic and pretty Batman. I've got sketch covers. I bought sketch covers of Batman and Wonder Woman, and I have illustrations from current modern day Frank Miller, and I dig it. It's grimy. It's underground. It looks like it owes more to clothes and to Robert Crumb, and I dig it. He's not worried about impressing you anymore. He's just doing what he does to have fun. But when he had this, when he had his shot to get to where he is now, he had that dog, he had that fight, and he took control. And when you think of Frank Miller, you associate him with the Lecter. When you think of Walt Simonson, you associate him with Beta Ray Bill. When you think about Todd McFarlane, you associate him with Venom, okay? Because they left behind something, because they took control and they asserted a greater control over their career. They left something lasting. What are you leaving that's lasting? What are you leaving that's lasting? Are you just trying to outdo the other guy that is your rival in terms of doing comic book covers? Is that your goal? I just want to do comic book covers. I just want to do the best Transformers cover that I could possibly do. And I want to tour and I want to sign those. That's great. That's a living. That's going back to you can be the guy that shoots Die Hard 9. Okay? But the auteurs are born from something different. And there are two very distinct, very special draft classes that happened in the 70s. I've already named them. That happened in the 80s. I've already named them. And they went on to define the 70s, the 80s, and then the 80s and the 90s. Because there was an example set forth. The example is in the work. People's words don't always matter. It's their actions that matter. And the actions of this talent group, and some of you out there, let me tell you, I'm going to be the first to tell you, you're getting stale. You're getting stale. You need to move and make moves and make them bold. And it doesn't have to be on a Marvel or a DC character. It can be in something that you control and create. And if it didn't work the first time, try it a second time. Okay? Again, players keep moving. And the media goes, oh, they're difficult. Hey, so what? Be difficult. Be difficult and do great work. Then being difficult doesn't really matter. Think of who you are listening to right now. Okay? I am very close to having no corporate comic connection any further in my life. I have enjoyed it so much. You know what was important to me? It was a 32-year anniversary of Youngblood the other day, and I read the original LA Times article that chronicled my journey. And there's a great paragraph. It says, I have no beef with Marvel. People tried to make it, oh, did you leave? No, I left because the door was open, the window was there, and before it closed, I was going to take it. Take it. There is talent. That is undeniable. But how are you using your talent to affect? You know, I read about a player that other teams wanted but in the NBA this last year, but the player reportedly told his agent, I don't want to move anywhere. I don't want to go be a complimentary piece. I just want to stay here and get my numbers and score. I can put up 25, 30 a night. And there was debate. What is this guy thinking? Well, you know what? That's just what he wants. He just wants to be a stat beast now. He just wants to be a stat beast. And this guy, because of his association with other greats, has one ring. But now the team he's on, he can just go put up numbers and he doesn't want to be a complimentary piece, a third option to another team. You know, that works. Get paid, score points, get buckets. In comic books, you can go to conventions and do covers and impact the industry in that way. Or you can be bold in this world of crowdfunding and instant links with your fans via all the different avenues available to us. You can do great things. You can do impactful things. Hey, if it's a bucket list project, take the time, work it out, but take the time and make sure it works out to your favor. I have had the best time whenever I have done any stuff with Marvel. I have managed to have a good, I had great success under Axel Alonso. I'm having great success with C.B. Cebulski. All the while, I've been doing my entire projects the entire time. But now the focus is going to be on my entire projects. As I informed you guys all, my last Deadpool work is on me. And when that's done, I'm so excited about the stuff that I'm doing non-Marvel, non-corporate, that's going to occupy me probably to the point where I'm going to retire. But it wasn't for a lack of trying that I tried to make my impact and make the people that inspired me make the spirit of what they did proud. They may not have liked us. Matter of fact, some of them grumbled. Well, what are we trying to do? Replace them? These draft classes, they are once in a lifetime. Those names I shared to you. Some people, you get discouraged too easy. You give it up too easy. Stay in the fight. Shape it to your will. Get that project that you want, that you know that you have inside you, that's going to change the entire way that people view you and your impact. Again, a lot of focus on events and the corporations are trying to get you and your retailer to get excited, but you know why they're not? Because they're not organic. And the most potent word of mouth, the most excitement that you can generate ever is organically grabbing onto a talent, following their journey, following the worlds and the characters and the situations that they created. And then, because once the talent is cooking, you don't know what's coming next. But in a corporate retreat and building out all the beats and making sure that this event goes here, there, that, you know, that's in today's market, honestly, it's all too predictable. I saw a couple events in the last year where they tried to shock and awe and they just didn't land. And now as some renewed attempts to do this are being underway, I'm going to tell you, it's the organic shit that is going to land. It is the organic shit that is going to take root and grow and be the stuff that you remember the most fondly. So, draft class, wherever you are with your talent, what are you doing with it? You're just going to stay over here, be resigned, get some buckets, get paid, you know, get a deal with the shoe company, get a jersey contract. Or in comics, are you going to tell that story that is transformational, but it takes you off the current treadmill, the current grind that you're on creatively and shift you? And everyone will convince you that not to do that because they want you doing what you're doing for them right now and the way that you're doing it right now because it's the way they want it done. Do it for you and make your mark. And that's all I got to say. And that's where I'm going to end this. So as I catch my breath, I'm going to tell you something. In between recording this, I had to step away and have an hour-long meeting, a creative meeting on an extreme property. And I'm just going to tell you right now, I nearly had my face melted off. The amount of creative energy, and if I could tell you the names that are going on, that are assembling for this, it would blow your mind. I am so amped. And it all started, let me tell you something, it started from a comic book that I took direction, that I took my own initiative, that I took control of. Here I am now, 3 decades later, and I have got the most exciting talent. And I am talking about launching this into the stratosphere. And that meeting I just came, oh my gosh, that will fuel me for the next 3 days. I have some great pages coming for me that I can assure you it is because that I decided to do something organic and make an impact. And so again, get out there, draft classes, talent pools, make your mark, okay? It really is. It's just that simple. It doesn't get much more. It doesn't get more complicated than that. You know what? When I'm away from this show, I'm all over social media. I want you to follow me there. I want you to hang with me. I definitely want you to interact with me. I'm on the platform known as X, formerly known as Twitter. I am at Robert Liefeld, R-O-B-E-R-T-L-I-E-F-E-L-D, at Robert Liefeld. I have a blue check. It tells you that it's really me. I am the real deal. I am verifiable. I love to interact with you guys. I read your DMs, your replies, your mentions. It is so great, the conversations that we are able to have over on X. Please hang out with me. I dig you and I dig our interactions so very much. If you're not hanging out over on X, check me out on Instagram. I'm just at Rob Liefeld, at Rob Liefeld. Got the blue check. That's me digging you the most and loving to share all of the art and the panels and the pages that I give you sneak peeks with. I share with you times that I have with my family, my friends, my travels, the food, the great times that I'm having. Instagram is like my life diary. I would love for you to follow me over there at Rob Liefeld. You're always going to get a sneak peek of something. I assure you, I am just at Rob Liefeld. Thank you, Joy Liefeld, for securing that name for me way, 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 way back because we got squatted on Twitter. That's why I'm at Robert Liefeld on Twitter. I am at Rob Liefeld on Instagram. Got a blue check. Signifies, again, it is really me. I read your mentions, your replies, all of the ways that you speak and talk and interact with me. I appreciate it so much. Social media is a really fun place. I enjoy it so much, and I enjoy talking to you the very most. We have a group. It's on Facebook. It's called Rob Liefeld Marvel Extreme and Beyond. I need to see it more with more fanfare. Marvel Extreme and Beyond. Okay. That's a Facebook group. I have a co-administrator named Terry Sala, S-A-L-A. It's either myself or him who will punch you through and then approve all your posts. We have great buzz, great energy over there. We don't let things get negative or ugly. We want to keep it fun. We have art contests regularly. We vote on them. That determines the winner. We share articles, passions, things that we love. And we, most importantly, talk about each and every episode over there in a long form way. That's where I get some of the questions. That's where I get some of the back and forth. It's really rich. It's great conversation. Great bunch of people. Please join us. It's a Facebook group, not a page, a Facebook group. It's Rob Liefeld, Marvel Extreme and Beyond. We look forward to enjoying your company over in that group. I mentioned Whatnot. It's a downloadable app. And the reason I push it so much is I'm on it twice a week on a live stream talking directly to you. It's like this show, but with a camera on me. And I have to be semi on my best behavior, but I'm a little grumpy at night. This podcast is a morning exercise. It's so fun. I'm so happy in the morning. I'm caffeinated. I'm sugar-coated. It's so fun. But at night, live stream, we have exclusive comics. Did you know I have exclusive variants for Spider-Man, for Deadpool, the New Mutants, X-Force, Captain America, for Prophet, for Blood Wolf, for Evangeline, all only available on my Whatnot. That is the only way that we do business online is through my Whatnot live streams. And the store is open 24/7. You can place orders. We fulfill them. We have a 5-star rating. We have done over 10,000 pieces in the 20 months that we have been on Whatnot. We have earned our status over on that company. We just had an X-Men special animated number one red foil that flew, that was in high demand. I have a comic book that you can only get from me. I wrote it. I drew it. It's called The Last Blood. It concerns the future, the cataclysmic future of the extreme characters that maybe you grew up digging. I am currently about to send the second issue to press. It will be there in short order. And then you will have two brand new comic books only available from me on Whatnot. Get Whatnot. Follow Rob Liefeld so you will be alerted when you see me go live and you can join us. Look forward to seeing you over on the Whatnot app. I'm in the comic and collectible division. We have so many great custom signatures, remarks. I draw on Funkos and toys. Please join us. Whatnot at Rob Liefeld. Follow me and you'll be notified. Currently, we've extended the deadline over at CGC, the premier grading service, for my in-house signings, because so many of the New Mutants 98 foils and the New Mutants 98 3Ds and all of the specialty Deadpool items and all the stuff, Wolverine, my cover to Deadpool Wolverine, which I love so much, number one, it's coming out in a couple weeks. We had to extend the deadline in order for you to be able to send that stuff to us. They gave retailers a pretty quick notice, a turnaround on the foils and the 3D, and you guys are going to be able to get those and receive them and then send them in. We extended the deadline to June, and I can still fly to Florida, do my second ever in-house signing. The first one went so well. We got so many great books to you people. We got them turned around fast. You got high grades. Everybody at CGC wants to please you so much. I love going there. It is completely focused, 10 hours a day, sign. They were shocked. I didn't want to go off-site. I didn't want to go to... True story. I can tell this 8 months later. They were shocked I wouldn't leave the premises. I just wanted to get this stuff done there. But don't you want to go out to lunch, have something catered? No, I said, let's go to the mess hall, the snack room. Let's get some snacks and let's get going. We have to please you, the consumer. And that's what we did. And they laughed 2 days in a row. They're like, no one does this. It was like 2.5 days. the third day I didn't make it to lunch. But the other days they're like, what is going on here? No one goes and gets chips out of the machine and a Coke and keeps it going. Okay. Look, we are excited to get your books. Go to CGC, go to their website, look for the Rob Liefeld in-house signing and get us your books. Please, we want to sign them and turn them around in time and get them in your hands before July 26, when Deadpool Wolverine is playing in theaters, and it is going to play big, it is going to play loud, it is going to play long. You are going to want to be a part of it. Woo, I got a lot going on. Wow. Okay, the Evangeline Kickstarter, I already mentioned it, I'm mentioning it again. Get on that omnibus. That is the best deal you're going to get. Counterpoint Comics has fulfilled 30 different separate campaigns. They are the premier choice for this item. Evangeline Omnibus collecting 30 years worth of Evangeline comics that we have never, ever collected. Collected for the first time ever in a handsome hardcover. Please be a part of it. Please participate. Go to Kickstarter. Look up Evangeline Omnibus through Counterpoint Entertainment or Counterpoint Comics, and it should come up, and I hope you can jump on. We're going to have special deals, stretch goals. We're currently, as you hear this, in a 48-hour window that you should take advantage of. So get on that, and we are very excited to have you participate with us in that endeavor. It's a great deal. So here's the deal. At the end of each and every show, we read the reviews that you leave for us on the Apple platform, on text, on messages, wherever that you guys directly send them to. I'm checking all the time. I get them from all different corners. And today I'm going to share with you one from Canada. I mentioned Canada. I mentioned Alpha Flight. I mentioned the Canucks. There was a character called Captain Canuck. I bought that too. This is from Lulianism. Lulianism. There's no other way to say this other than Lullianism. Lullianism. Enthusiasm abounds. 5 stars. Thank you. I can't believe that little boy from the Levi's commercial grew up to become the elder statesman of comic books. Thank you, Rob, for beaming your love of comics on the internet. That's it. It's that succinct. I accept that. I dig it. I love it. I'm so appreciative, again, that's how you see it. That's how you see this podcast. Thank you so very much for listening. Thank you so much for taking the time to leave this Lullianism from Canada. Left just a few days ago here in April. Thank you. Thank you that you think that the enthusiasm abounds. I am so excited about comics constantly. Thank you so much. Again, extra Robservations. If you don't want to participate, not a problem, but we're putting extra episodes on my Patreon account. Look for a new one to load this weekend. Go Rob Liefeld Patreon. You'll see the different tiers. Hopefully, if that's something that you crave, that's going to be there for you. So, hey, when you want to leave a nice review for our show, it will find me. I will read it here at the end of each and every Robservations episode. We are fueled by you and your passion and your enthusiasm, and I dig it. Been doing this comic book thing for just shy of 40 years, 39 years and 5 decades, 80s, 90s, 2000s, 2010s, now in the 2020s. I dig it. There's no slowing us down. We are the dreamers. We make the coolest shit. We just do. And it's so much fun. And I love talking about it and sharing it with you. And sometimes, like in the form of today's show, maybe challenging you a little. Maybe having you look at a certain facet and maybe consider, could you do more? Could you be bolder? Hey, at the very end, this is where I want to just wish you all the best and hope that your spiritual, your mental, your emotional, and your physical being are where they need to be. Life is a grind. The treadmill can just wear us all down. And please, I encourage you, take some time off. Step away. Go out with your friends. Go out with family. Give love. Be loved. Laugh. Have a great time. Go to a concert. Go to a play. End of the year, you're going to no doubt be attending somebody's graduation. My wife gave me a bunch of graduation stuff that we're going to attend. I love attending my friends' kids' graduations. I love giving to them, helping launch their future. It's so exciting. We could not be more thrilled. We could not be more thrilled at graduation season. But, it's a way to change the focus. Focus on somebody else. Focus on something else. Watch a streaming show. Go see that great movie that you've been putting off. Read that great comic. Read that stack of comic books that keeps building up that you haven't cracked, that you haven't even taken out of the bag and board that they put it in when they sold it to you. Crack that omnibus. Check it out. Just go somewhere else emotionally, mentally, spiritually to get, reborn, to get inspired. Because that's, at the end of the day, that's what's carrying us. And it's easy to get beat down. Again, I got my burdens. I have 3 adult children. I'm going to be married 29 years here in a few weeks. Well, a couple months, 2 months. Life has all manner of challenges. And we are navigating together each and every day. I am rooting for you. I am wishing for you all the very best. I am the guy that can hope for your success and be happy for you. Find more of those people in your life. Ditch the negative people. Get those people who wear you down. Get them out. Be with people who cheer for you, who do right by you, who want the very best for you. Okay. I want the very best for you. Take care of yourself, please. Okay. Fist bump right through the Blue Yeti, as we always do. And do not forget, don't leave me here. Come back. See me. I'll be right here. We will absolutely, most definitely, and inevitably, we will talk again real soon.